Committee on Rules and Administration to order. A quorum is present. Members, we have four bills today. Three of them came from the Elections Subcommittee, I believe. Or did they all? Three. Senator Franzen. Senate File 872. And members, that is here because of... Because of Article 2, Section 1... creates a, is it a subcommittee? What are we creating? A council. We're creating a council. And because there's legislators on it, it's in front of the Rules Committee. Senator Franzen, what kind of a council are we creating here that has legislators on it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's correct. We have a Cultural and Ethnic Leadership Communities Council, and this is part of a broader agency bill. And I know that that particular section has also been traveling separately under the authorship of Senator Hayden. So this one just has the same component plus additional DHS agency areas that are not under the jurisdiction of the Rules Committee. So we are looking to add two, I believe, four legislators, yeah, members. And I have with me from the Department of Health and Human Services, Antonia Wilkerson, who can also elaborate on Section 2 of Senate File 872.
Any questions, members? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, out of curiosity, I know that we have councils. I'm most familiar with the Council on Black Minnesotans. I served as a liaison to that council for, in the past, and I know that in just reading the purpose in the bill, it seems very, very similar. And I'm just wondering if we're duplicating and why, and if we do have, for example, a Council of Black Men, I don't know, I assume the other ethnic councils are doing similar kinds of purposes and missions and trying to do the same, provide the same kind of advice to not only the Commissioner of Human Services but other departments as well. Why would we need to have a separate council established for the Department of Human Services? And does that mean that we'll also have to have separate departments established, councils established in education or other departments as well as we go forward? I'm just wondering what the reason for the duplication might be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Hahn, and that's a great question. And I'll have Ms. Wilkerson also chime in on here, and this is intended to work particularly with health disparities, and the councils are going to be working in partnership, but they don't have the capacity nor the resources to really delve into the health disparities issues that we're confronting in the state. So that's why this has been a recommendation to move forward, but it will be in close coordination with the variety of councils that we have, like the Chicano, Latino, the Black Council, and others. So it will be not duplicating, but enhancing and complementing the work that the councils already do. But I'll let Ms. Wilkerson also elaborate, too, a little bit more about the focus of this council and the duties of the people who would be part of this council as well.
Ms. Wilkerson, anything to add?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn, members of this committee. The Cultural and Ethnic Communities Leadership Council currently meets as a Disparities Reduction Advisory Committee, which were formed about 4 years ago as a gathering of some DHS employees appointed by their assistant commissioners and members of the different cultural communities. Also at the table were members and staff of the different councils of color, as well as ombudsperson for families. 4 years ago, the leadership at DHS identified disparities as one of the priorities that needed to be addressed, or it would impede our accomplishing our mission. Since then, we have convened these meetings and gathering feedback and input from those communities most impacted by disparities. Our focus is much more on human services rather than the broader scope of the Councils of Color and the Ombudsperson for Families. We work closely together, and they send staff who contribute to the discussion as well as some of the recommendations that we have brought inside the agency. About 2 years ago, members of the community asked the agency if we could make this committee a more formal body within the agency so that they felt they would have empowerment and more of a presence as it pertains to disparities reduction.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Ms. Wilcox. And I, in the discussion on the formation of this council and the membership, was there any thought or consideration given to, as you talk here about appointing between 15 and 25 people to serve, to have those members be drawn from the existing membership of the existing commissions? And I mean, would that be if that were the an amendment proposed to this bill to say you've got these existing, like Council of Black Minnesotans, the other council, that this membership for this particular body should be chosen from those existing bodies as a way of, first of all, I think, enhancing their role as councils and also to make sure that there is a stronger unification. I mean, does that make any sense, or was that contemplated, or is that something that would be worth contemplating in the bill?
Ms. Wilcoxon.
Mr. Chair, members of this committee, Senator Hahn, it is the expectation of the current members of the committee to apply, and because they already have that familiarity, a lot of the wording in this language has been generated as a partnership between our staff at DHS and community members. So we were extremely thoughtful in terms of including a representation that would be inclusive of as many of the interested parties as we could. And yes, the current membership of the committee will be invited to apply. We don't have this specified here, however.
And Mr. Chair, and I'm not familiar with the committee you're referring to. I'm speaking more of the existing councils that we've established in the legislature, and to look at the membership of those commissions as being the source from which the members for this particular council would be selected. And that's my question, whether that would be anticipated.
Okay. Ms. Wilcoxon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Hahn, that is correct. And when I talk about cultural communities, I am including the councils of color who send staff, either their directors or staff of those councils, are currently members of the committee. So, yes, they would be considered, and they will be invited to apply.
Anything else further, Hahn? Senator Hahn?
Well, I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, and I guess maybe counsel can give advice if it would be worth putting into the language of the bill that when we say no fewer than 15, no more than 25 members appointed by the Commissioner of Human Services from the existing commissions, ethnic commissions, would make that clear that what the expectation would be is that these people appointed to serve would also be serving concurrently in other commissions. If that's the intent, then it might avoid some duplication. I guess what I'm concerned about is that you create two separate commissions that may interpret their mission to be a little different, and they may, I don't know, choose different courses. And I guess I'm trying to see if we can at least do all we can to establish some unity of direction on these on the work of the council.
Senator Hansel, doesn't become too rigid and they couldn't find other expertise. Maybe we could consider a majority of them should come from the current councils. I'm just kind of thinking
sure.
out loud. But
sure. I guess I'd look at advice from our council on that.
Council?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, you have several options in dealing with this, and of course one would be to require that a majority of the appointments be made from those councils. I had been working along the lines of directing the commissioner to give priority in making the appointments, which is a somewhat more open-ended charge. Really, it's up to you to decide that, of course, I think in looking at the groups the commissioner is required to consult with, that's a fairly broad list. County, tribal, cultural, and ethnic communities possibly viewed as a little broader than the current memberships of those legislative councils. But if you want, I can provide an amendment for you that would accomplish either the majority requirement or some kind of priority.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Bonner, I guess I would defer to the author. I'm not trying to do harm here to the bill. I'm just trying to see if there's a way to create additional duplication of efforts and see if we can create some unity of purpose here.
Senator Franzen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, and I appreciate your efforts here. And just to be clear also, this has not been presented in isolation, not with we actually do have some of the councils have testified in favor of this bill. I also have in front of me, which I can make readily available for the rest of the members, a letter from the Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Human Rights, who also supports this endeavor. And you know, I understand that you're not trying to duplicate efforts. I think the concern here is that we have DHS and everything done under Health and Human Services is so complex and such a big bucket that you're really expecting a lot from our current councils that frankly don't have the ability or the resources to really delve into a big chunk of the efforts that we're trying to achieve here, which is closing the disparities in health. So while I appreciate having them on board, and we should probably have language maybe that says that the priority or really engage them and make it clear that they need to be a part of this council, we're trying to expand beyond the council to bring in expertise and people who are coming just outside the council that can also enhance the work that we're trying to achieve here.
Senator Hahn, priority or majority?
I guess I would look to a recommendation that the author would be willing to accommodate. I mean, I'm not trying to – I'm just trying to make a suggestion that I hope would be friendly. And so if Mr. Bodden has got some suggestions on how we might do that, I'd be happy to
– Senator Franzen, do you have a preference if we move towards giving the commission – putting a priority on the other councils or if it should be a majority? Do you have a preference?
This is the leadership.
My preference would be priority, but I also would like to know from DHS, because they've had more interaction with the councils than I have, to know what would be also something that they would suggest based on those conversations and the intent of having this council in the first place.
Ms. Wilcoxon.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, I appreciate your suggestion, and I would like to make sure that it is clear that the councils of color and all the entities that particularly try to address directly each one of the cultural communities that are impacted by disparities are present at the table. There are four councils of color, and we will continue to use their counsel and their presence at our meetings. As your suggestion for the majority, I'm a little bit confused because there will be four councils, and if the executive director cannot attend, he or she usually sends someone on their staff. And then we have layers and layers of other communities who also want to participate, representing either their own community organizations, or some of them are also have specific issues that sometimes the councils are not addressing as directly as we are in this council.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Franzen, I noticed that, and Senator Pappas and I were discussing the idea that really the purpose of, and I think she'd agree that the purpose of this bill is before us here, is that we're putting legislators on this council. But I had another question that somehow I think that's humorous. I had a question that eluded me in Judiciary Committee, and on the front page, there's a commissioner is given the authority to install a human service judge. And is this this particular person, would they be an employee of the department, or would they be under the jurisdiction of the judicial branch of government? Is there something different?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, you're referencing the audit portion of the bill that
I'm addressing the fair hearing section,
Article 1. Article 1.
And it says the commissioner shall only appoint as a full-time human service judge an individual who's licensed to practice law. And the word judge kind of jumps out of the page on me, because usually we refer to that position or title as someone under the authority of the judicial branch. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, then that appointment would be made by the governor, not the commissioner of this agency. So I was just wondering if you could give me a little more definition of is judge, for lack of a better term, or what?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, and I'll also get DHS's point of view on this, but it basically is the Article 1, which is not in the jurisdiction of the discussion today, but I'll be happy to respond. Administrative judges are, in this case, are trying to be, most of them are lawyers. So that's why this is that they want to make sure that they continue to use that term of art. They are DHS employees, to my understanding, not judicial appointments, because they're not judges with regards to the judicial branch, but for going through hearings, DHS hearings that deal with malpractice of or maltreatment of elderly and so forth. Those are the type of judges we're referencing in this bill, and under the purview of DHS versus the judicial branch. So they're different, and it's a common practice in other states as well that they're called administrative judges, and they don't have to be a lawyer. But in this particular change that we made, we want to make sure that we are hiring people with the law background, because it's become so complex to deal with these hearings that that's the preference. And I'll have another. Is that good? Okay. And if you have any further questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Are we expanding the jurisdiction of this hearing process in any way?
It's, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, not to my understanding. They already do this type of work, and that's the way the state handles those appeals for those type of cases. They're not under the purview, again, of the judicial branch. And I want to make a note that the people we're talking about today in the council, which is Article 2, those would not be paid people that would be participating in the council versus the folks that are already in the councils that Senator Hahn mentioned. Those are paid by the state. The people on this particular council, the Ethnic and Cultural Council, for purposes of HHS, will be non-paid people that would be appointed.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, when I look at Article 2 regarding this new council, I think in terms of the current boards, commissions, agencies, councils, et cetera, that the state of Minnesota already has, and to my recollection, we have hundreds of them, and we are now contemplating creating yet another one. And I just believe that we would be better off using, it's already been testified today, for instance, we have four councils of color already, and there's, in all likelihood, other boards or commissions that would have the ability to address what this bill does, and that is to address disparities that affect racial and ethnic groups. It seems to me that it would be a wiser use of time and money to simply expand the jurisdiction of an existing council, if in fact that is necessary, rather than create yet another council for the legislature to watch over and fund and participate in. So for that reason, just it's an expansion of yet another council that I believe would be duplicative and unnecessary. I think that there are other already existing councils that would be able to address this issue. I will not be able to support this bill.
Senator Pappas.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I missed part of this discussion, but I'm very familiar with the councils of color, and they are very small staffed, and they have a lot of issues on their plate. And they have to reach out to multiple communities, like the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans represents, you know, probably 20 different Asian groups. The Council of Black Minnesotans is also dealing with the large African population now. So they really don't have the capability to go into the depths that this is requiring. Plus, this is really an existing council that that the Commission of Human Services already has in place, is my understanding, and the department is requesting this in their policy bill to formalize it and to make it more permanent. And third, really our jurisdiction is only to talk about whether legislators should be on this council, and my question about that would be, you know, do legislators have time to do this, and are they willing to do it? And since it probably came through Senator Sharon's committee, obviously she thinks she has time to do it.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, to kind of move us along here, I would move to use priority. And maybe Senate Counsel could figure out exactly where that would go.
Counsel?
So, Mr. Chairman, the suggestion would be on page 11, line 20, after the period, insert the following sentence. In making appointments under this subdivision, the Commissioner shall give priority and consideration to public members of legislative councils of color established under Chapter 3.
So moved.
Senator Stump moves the oral language recited by counsel. Senator Hahn?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think that is a good suggestion, and I support that.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pappas?
I'm just wondering if those public members have time to do this, given all the other duties of a council. It might be better if we did recommendations from the councils of color. So they wouldn't have to be a sitting council member, but they may want to make recommendations to this this council.
Your birthday?
It could be someone else in the community. Senator Hahn, what do you think about that? And you just want them in the loop, right?
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Pappas, my concern is sort of echoes a little bit of what Senator Newman's concern is. I just believe that we have councils that exist that seem to have a similar mission and trying to enhance or broaden their scope of application, and instead of creating an additional council that may be duplicative in some sense, to try to take existing membership and say, all right, do what you're doing in a more, but also do it over here. And if there are members in those councils that do exist that can also participate here, we should do that.
They should be asked. And if they can't, they should be, and I think, if they don't have time, they can say no.
And I think, Mr. Chairman, that Senator Stump's suggestion of, say, make a priority or trying to do that would give them some flexibility of saying if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it may not. But I think it, to me, it makes sense to try to draw on the resources that we have and not try to create additional, perhaps conflicting councils.
On the Stump motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Just a question, and Mr. Chair, Senator Franz, and maybe you can help me out. As we look at the members of the council, it just consists of the chairs of the committees of the House of Representatives and Senate, which jurisdiction with jurisdiction over human services. And I'm just wondering why there are no minority caucus members from the minority caucuses, because usually, traditionally, that's how we do it, and this would be just the majority members.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I'll defer to Ms. Wilcoxon to know why we went that way.
Ms. Wilcoxon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, this was a suggestion in one of the committees that we add this language. There was a discussion about inclusion of minority members, but that is something that our agency would be open to if you feel strongly that there should be this addition.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Franzen, what was the discussion in committee?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I believe that's probably with Senator Hayden's bill, which was also traveling separate, and not this one. So I'm not familiar with that discussion. So if Ms. Wilcoxon can elaborate on that discussion, that'd be great, because it wasn't referenced this bill.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, I guess I would, with Senator Marty's encouragement, I'll just offer whatever amendment would be appropriate to add the ranking minority members of those committees. I guess it's probably the easiest way to do it. I'm making you take credit for it.
So, Council, the Fischbach motion would be what?
Mr. Chairman, on page 11, line 16, after chairs, insert, and the ranking minority members.
Oh, yeah.
Almost got a card.
Senator Fischbach, Senator Marty, does that meet your intent?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that sounds good.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Everybody understand the Fischbach oral amendment? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you.
Something to consider, I think, members, is on line 12.13, the next page. On compensation, it says members of the council shall receive no compensation for their services. I think what we've normally seen when we say no compensation is it generally says public members. I mean, this would actually prohibit the Senate from paying any per diem or mileage for legislators that serve on it. And I'm just wondering if that's the intent of the Rules Committee or not, that members wouldn't be able to use the Senate budget to participate. I'm just wondering how people feel about that. Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I'm just, so if the existing language says that the members of the council shall receive no compensation, they don't get, do they get mileage, anything like, public members?
Nobody.
So nobody gets
anything.
The way
the language is currently drafted.
So then if we changed it to the way you're looking at, or the way you're kind of proposing, then only the legislators would get reimbursement.
They'd be getting it from their employer, the state senate, or the state house. I expect a lot of the public members are already on payroll someplace.
Okay, Mr. Chair, that was kind of my question, yeah. is would it, as long as the legislators aren't the only ones that would be able to get something from their employer or whatever the case may be.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, and I know that, again, in the other bill that's going on its own, Senator Hayden, there was discussion, I believe there was an amendment to actually compensate everybody in the council. I don't think that's necessarily the way to go, but I see that the unintended consequences that we wouldn't, in this language, would be that we wouldn't be compensating the legislators who are serving on it, which is, it is the purview of this committee and our discussion. So I'd be open to making that distinction in this language.
Mr. Chair,
Senator
just a point
Fischbach.
Of clarification. Mr. Chair, Senator Franzen, you keep referring to Senator Hayden's bill.
Yes.
And we don't have that in front of us, so I don't know what's in that bill. And
sure.
I guess, does it include all, is it a, kind of a copy of this, or what is it?
Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, and I apologize that I shouldn't probably be referring to the bill, but I know that I know some of the comments here have been made and have been really on the conversation on other committees that deal with this portion of the bill. And anyway, I won't refer to Senator Hayden's bill anymore, but it basically
Mr.
is the Cultural Council was traveling on its own in a separate bill, and it's been amended. So I'm not sure what the status of it is today and the changes that have been. But I know that some of these concerns have been raised in those conversations, so I can speak to the ones I know.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, what if we just added the words no compensation from the council for their services? That way, if some of them are employed in agencies or legislature or other places where they can receive compensation, then they can receive the compensation. It's just the council wouldn't have any obligation to fund them.
Senator Marty, I think we could accomplish the same thing by, on line 12.13, put the word public in front of members.
That's fine.
And I just want to have a discussion about that. I think if we're going to ask legislators to participate in things, and we're naming individuals. We're not saying somebody volunteers for this. It's the chair and the ranking minority member. I think to ask them to do it without being at least eligible to submit for their expenses to the Senate is, I think, a reasonable thing for us to talk about.
Especially if you're from.
How do people feel about that? Senator Newman, thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, if it's important to a member to serve on this council, you would have no objection to them serving without being compensated.
I'm just a little concerned about the precedent we start to set if we're not going to allow people to take per diem for doing work that they didn't volunteer for. It. They took the position because they happened to be the chair of the committee or the ranking minority member of the committee. It seems a little unfair. Not that they're going, not that they're, then they don't have to submit it, but I think they should at least have an opportunity to. Senator Limmer?
Mr. Chair, the way this is suggested on lines 13 and 14, this is a statement that basically says public members of the council shall receive no compensation for their service. Does that bar a legislative chair to compensate a member that might want to serve? Does that bar a request for per diem from a chair? Because the statement is rather blunt, saying you shall not receive. And I think Senator Marty's suggestion and yours with the word public in front of it might be a better hybrid to explain. I'm thinking of rural members that might be coming in. There's an expense of travel. They're taking a longer day off for their maybe a 1 or 2 hour meeting, and then they have to turn around and go back. I'm just concerned about that.
Council, any Senator Stump?
Mr. Chair, we had some experience of that in the last 2 years under, you know, I think we were kind of frozen, but it wasn't very pleasant.
So. Council, do you have a suggestion to the committee could consider?
Mr. Chairman, on page 12, line 13, and this is just a hybrid of the two suggestions that have been made so far. Before members, insert public, and after compensation, insert from the council. And I think that would clarify there may be other members on the council who receive compensation from other public employers, and this wouldn't prevent that from occurring as well.
Senator Marty moves the oral amendment suggested by council. Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any other discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Marty.
Just one real quick question on something Senator Limmer raised earlier. I was just curious, it's not this committee's jurisdiction, the administrative law judges are people who have to practice law in Minnesota and are, one, on inactive status. I assume they mean they're actively a lawyer. What does an inactive resident at the top of page 2 mean? A couch potato is what I think of when I think of an inactive. But what's it mean here?
You actually what is have it? That amendment, don't you?
No.
Yeah.
I was just, if you don't know, I can ask later. It just was unclear language what it means.
Senator Marty, council's not even sure what it means.
It may need fixing. I think it means couch potato.
Senator Franz, we don't expect you to answer that, but maybe we can try to get some understanding of why somebody in the revisors or somebody at the department thought that was important.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, I will look into that, and if we need to make a change or a clarification, we'll make sure that happens before it goes to the floor.
This is going to the floor. Any other discussion? Senator Pappas moves Senate File 872 as amended to be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. No. Senator Prenzin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And good experience in the Rules Committee.
Thank you. I hope I'll be back soon.
Senator Sieben is going to present a bill on behalf of Senator Bonhoff. Senator Bonhoff wasn't able to be here today. I believe she's attending a funeral. This bill needs to go to state and local government, so and I think they're planning on hearing it yet either probably Friday.
Friday.
Committee report would go to the floor tomorrow. They would hear it either tomorrow or Friday, but the bill needs to go to state and local. Senator Sieben, on behalf of Senator Bonhoff, Senate File 1232.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Senator Bonhoff has been working
with some members of the House, as well as Senator Kiffmeyer, to establish a pilot project for using electronic poll books, and also establishing a task force to look at the implementation of that, or I shouldn't say the implementation, but the potential implementation of using poll books in Minnesota elections. So I can run through the bill real quickly. And
Senator Sieben, why don't we get the delete all, the subcommittee report in front of us. Senator Sieben moves SS1232-SUB, which is the subcommittee report, as an amendment to Senate File 1232.
And just to clarify to the members who are on the subcommittee, this language is the language that we amended in the subcommittee.
On the Sieben motion to get it in front of us.
Just curious, Senator Stump. Mr. Chairman, why did it not meet deadline, or what is it, why is it here?
Mr. Chair, it's here, and Senator Stump, it's in rules because we're a subcommittee on elections, any bill has from our subcommittee has to come through this committee.
On adoption of the subcommittee report, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Senate File 1232 is now in front of the Rules Committee.
So, Mr. Chair, Section 1 of the bill establishes the pilot project, and as you can see in Subdivision 2 of that, it lists the participating cities. It leaves open how many precincts within the jurisdiction of each city can participate. It talks about the technology that would be required in Subdivision 3, and some of the specifications of running the pilot project and then the subsequent subdivisions. And then Section 2 talks about the establishment of electronic roster task force, which is why the bill needs to go to state and local. So it establishes a task force with the members that you'll see the membership as outlined in Section or Subdivision 1 of Section 2. It clarifies that members of the task force can't have a financial interest with the electronic roster technology. There is a Minnesota company, interestingly enough, that has worked with Minnetonka, a city that has already done some work and used electronic poll books. And then you'll see in Subdivision 3, it talks about the duties of the task force or issues that the task force should look into and report back to the legislature. It specifies that the legislative members can receive compensation for serving on the task force. And then you'll see there's a blank appropriation. So this bill will still have to go to the Finance Committee once there's a fiscal note.
Any discussion? Senator Newman?
Sure. Members, in the subcommittee, I had already expressed my reservations on this bill, primarily because the issue of photographs were not included in the pilot project. In an informal meeting, DMV had been present and had indicated to us that the inclusion of photographs would be, I think their words were difficult to do. It just seems to me that in a pilot project, that would be a very good time to look into the photographs in future electronic poll books. And in point of fact, last year, when electronic poll books, this issue came forward, that was in fact part of the what was being discussed.
Be better if they get out.
So, you know, with that in mind, I will tell members that I will not be supporting this bill. But I did notice something additional that I didn't see in the subcommittee, I would, if you can, address it. Otherwise, maybe you could have a conversation with Senator Bonhoff about it. And if you don't know the answer, I can readily understand. But if you go to page 2, lines 3 and 4, it specifically says that precincts using electronic rosters don't have to comply with paragraphs 4, 5, and 6. That's back, so we go back to page 1, and beginning on line 1.29, subparagraphs 4, 5, and 6. Those seem to me to be some pretty important issues regarding the integrity of the voting system. So my question, why are we not providing the ability of the judges in the polling place to comply with subparagraphs 4, 5, and 6?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I just got help from counsel in answering that. So the provisions that are outlined in 4, 5, and 6 apply when a voter is registered beforehand. So these things are checked. These provisions in 4, 5, or 6 are checked when a voter registers prior to election day. And on 2.3 and 2.4, it's referencing same-day voter registration. And so the technology needs aren't, or the specifications of 4, 5, and 6 don't occur on same-day voter registration.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stephen. I question that. So, for instance, if you look at line 1.32, it talks about immediately alerting the election judge if someone has already voted. I don't know that that has anything to do with same-day registration or not. I mean, again, 4, 5, and 6 have, in my mind, more to do with election integrity than anything. And so I'm not trying to put you on the spot, Senator Sieben, and maybe Senator Bonoff would have a better explanation, but it seems incompatible judges in the voting place make use of these measures, which protect, I believe, the voting integrity process.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I think I'm going to have to clarify that. Council is telling me some things, but I just want to make sure I state accurately what council is telling me. So
I understand, Senator Sieben.
Thank you for that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Senator Stahl.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, you know, Clause 3 on lines 1.26, talks about scanning a Minnesota driver's license or identification card. Well, those would have pictures on them, wouldn't they? A photo?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Some of the discussion, as I understand it, around the photographs relates to the compromise of data that has occurred where, as we've seen in other areas of state agencies, where employees have been able to check or to look up different members of the public's information. So that was part of DVS's concern about being able to implement to put photographs into an electronic poll book in time. But to your point and to Senator Newman's point, you'll see that one of the duties of the task force that will be established is to, on lines 3.33, is they must research the ability to use photographs received from DVS and the ability to add photos to the roster on election day. So essentially the Senator Bonoff and Senator Kiffmeyer both want to have photographs included. But because of some of their conversations with DVS at this time, they just didn't feel like it was that they could get there in time to meet the timeline of the pilot project, and felt it would be useful to move forward with the pilot project without specification to photographs at this time, with the understanding that the task force would look into that and make recommendations to the subsequent legislature.
Any other discussion?
So, Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
Senator Stumpf, a real short answer is photographs will not be involved in the pilot project.
Senator Sieben, I'm looking at lines 4.1 to 4.14. the compensation section. I don't believe that's necessary. If we're silent on that, legislators will be able to request per diem or other expenses or overnight rooms, for that matter, from the Senate. If we speak to it, then I think it's mandatory, and I think giving the Senate the discretion whether we want to pay or what we want to allow. Is probably better. I mean, what is shall receive compensation? Do they get anything that they submit at that point? Does anybody review it? I think is kind of the question. So I think just from an oversight standpoint, it would be better if we could delete lines 4.1, 4.2, and the words task force on lines 4.13. And then that would just make it like other members' submissions for reimbursement is they'd be reviewed and signed off on by the Senate. Senator Steven.
Mr. Chair, I'm perfectly fine with that, and I believe Senator Bonoff would be too. But then the remaining language on 4.13 and 4.14, what does that?
Let's have Senator Steven, let's have counsel speak to it.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think the complete amendment would be on line 4.11, delete everything after the second period, and then delete line 4.12. On line 4.13, delete everything before shall and insert public members of the task force. So what remains will clarify that non-legislative members of the task force receive compensation as is already provided in existing law, which is a per diem, a $55 per diem, mileage, et cetera.
That's for Mr. Chair. And I'm just reflecting on our previous conversation with Senator Franzen's bill. So that would be that public members. I mean, I guess this could also be worked out in state and local, but I'm just questioning whether they need to be compensated then, the other members of the task force. But I don't feel strongly, and Senator Pappas could look at that in her.
Okay. Committee. Senator Pappas, why don't you take a look at that? But on
your motion,
council's
no,
oral
that.
Motion, Senator Skoy moves council's oral motion that would put the discretion to pay for compensation by the legislative members back in the House or Senate. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. Anything else on the bill? Senator Sieben moves that Senate File 1232 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to State and Local Government Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
The motion prevails. Senator Sieben, which other one? You've got a couple others. Which would you like to do first?
Senate File 1346. Members and Mr.
Yeah, we have a subcommittee report on that. Let's move, Senator Sieben, let's move adoption of the subcommittee report on Senate File 1346 to get it in front of us. Senator Sieben moves that. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
If you know, the motion prevails. The subcommittee report is adopted. Senator Sieben, Senate File 1346.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In the interest of time, I'll try to go through this really quickly. This Senate File 1346 includes provisions that were included in the elections omnibus bill that passed out of this committee 2 weeks ago. So there are things related to redistricting changes in Stillwater, ensuring that special elections are scheduled to allow time for absentee voting, and it removes many obsolete provisions relating to the reference to colored ballots. So with that, I'm happy to go through each section of the bill or answer questions about any of the sections of the bills or any sections contained in the bill, but these are already provisions that were passed in the larger omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Sieben, I've been kind of going through the material here, and it seems to me that these two bills are very similar. And I guess I'm a little confused about why we have them both, and maybe we ought to just have one. And if you say they contain provisions that have already been passed, maybe if we need to pass them at all. But I guess I'm a little bit confused about why we have two bills that are essentially doing the same thing. And And I've tried to understand why, you know, we've got one bill's got an effective date in it on some provisions, the other bill doesn't. I mean, it just doesn't. I'm a little bit at loss of what we're trying to accomplish here with the bill.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, the House wanted us to consider these various bills, and I agreed because I think that it's important, given that election legislation has this additional requirement that it meets bipartisan support. These provisions are largely non-controversial that are in both of these bills, and it just keeps alive the different various avenues for how we could come to some sort of agreement on election bills as we move towards the end of session.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, thank you. Is there a significant difference between these two bills? Or could you point out what the differences might be? I was trying to...
I can point out the differences. There is some language in Section 1, for instance, of both bills that references the redistricting panel in Stillwater. The second bill, Senate File 1374, makes some references to voter registration instructions must be made available in an audio format instead of a cassette tape. And that's not contained in 1346. The second bill contains references to the size of campaign signs and when they can be posted prior to the general election. That's not contained in the first bill. There are many of the references to the colored ballots, which is now obsolete language, that are contained in both bills, but there are some differences between the two bills.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, you said that this was largely non-controversial, but as I recall, last year, any of the redistricting boundary changes were vetoed. So I happen to have the governor's veto message from one in particular, the Senate Districts 39 and 49 bill that went through, that I believe was a pretty straight partisan vote at the time, and then it was vetoed. So I would think that I guess what's changed, and why did they not take the governor's suggestion and go to the redistricting panel in order to change this instead of coming back to the legislature?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, the main thing that changed is it wasn't immediately preceding a general election. So from our caucus's perspective, we felt that these changes should not be made immediately before a general election. It wasn't that we were that, if I could speak for members of our caucus, that we were opposed to the specific changes that were recommended, but that members of our caucus felt that these redistricting changes should not take place right before a general election occurred. And so, like I said, though, there was no problem with the recommendations that were made, and that's why you'll see similar language or the same language, in fact, being proposed this year.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, I don't believe the governor said that it was because it was just prior to a general election.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't speak for the governor, and I don't have his letter in front of me, but I recall that those were the conversations that occurred within our caucus as to why members decided to vote against the bills that came up on the floor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, have you talked to the governor again, at least his office, to see if this will be vetoed? I mean, you mentioned earlier that this was a non-controversial bill or had non-controversial provisions, and I would suggest to you that having language that has been vetoed by the governor is controversial.
Mr. Chair, I also understood that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the governor also vetoed it because it did not have bipartisan support. Now I'm saying that you'll have Democrat support, assuming that the language did not change, then you'll have Democrat and Republican support for these provisions. And so I don't anticipate that the governor's office or the governor will have specific problems with these provisions. In fact, we've met with his staff about various provisions of the overall omnibus elections bill, and they didn't express any concern about this now.
And Madam Chair, or excuse me, Mr. Chair, sorry, and Senator Sieben, and you're certain that Republicans will vote for this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I wouldn't want to guess what you're going to do or what members of your caucus are going to do, but in the past, these provisions were supported by Republican members, so the language has not changed with regard to the redistricting. So, no, if it now is controversial for you or other members, it's news to me, but I'm happy to hear about it.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, before it was opposed by Democrats, so
due to the timing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sieben, it was opposed by Democrats prior to this year.
Right. I understand that.
Senator Sieben renews her motion that Senate File 1346 be recommended to pass. Any other discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
If you know, the motion prevails.
No.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed. Senator Sieben, Senate File 1374.
Mr. Chair, as I stated before, this bill contains provisions that were included in the elections omnibus bill related, again, to redistricting in Stillwater, requiring voter registration instructions to be made in an audio format, and it deletes obsolete provisions that many of which reference colored ballots. So with that, again, I'm happy to answer questions about specific provisions of.
Senator Sieben moves adoption of the subcommittee report on Senate File 1374. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. No. The motion prevails. The subcommittee report is adopted. Any discussion on Senate File 1374? All in favor of Senate File 1374, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
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 The motion prevails. The bill is passed.